It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This week I spoke to co-leader of the Green Party, James Shaw, about a couple of issues. Firstly, we spoke about the Pacific Islands Forum, which was held 2 weeks ago, and saw leaders from across the Pacific meet to discuss the climate crisis, the effects of rising sea levels and extreme weather conditions. Pacific countries were seeking strict commitments to cutting down greenhouse gas emissions, phasing out coal power stations and creating a united statement to take to climate talks at the UN next month. However, Australia did not get on board with these red line decisions and ensured that coal was not specifically mentioned in the official statement and failed to take a strong stance on reducing emissions in the Pacific. I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about what his thoughts on Australia's decisions are. We also discussed a little bit about the police conduct report that came out about the police raid on Nikki Haga, the journalist's home, in 2014, and what the Green Party thinks about that. I began by asking James what his thoughts were on Australia's move at the Pacific Islands Forum.
Like a lot of the leaders of the Pacific Islands themselves, I'm disappointed. We just kind of got to keep rolling. And there are some areas where Australia's been really helpful. They've got a very, very strong aid program in the Pacific. And the declaration that they did sign up to did actually call for the phasing out of fossil fuels. Of course, coal is a fossil fuel. So it was a little bit more nuanced than that. But obviously the fact that they were kind of digging their toes in, I think, was unhelpful.
So the Australian Deputy Prime Minister, Michael McCormack, justified the decisions by stating that Pacific countries threatened by climate change would survive because many of their workers come to pick our fruit. What are your thoughts on that statement?
I think it's an absurd statement. It's extraordinarily condescending. And when you're talking to countries, some of which are so low-lying that they could actually lose 100% of their territory due to sea level rise in the not-too-distant future, to say that the nation will somehow manage to continue because you've got fruit-picking jobs in Australia, I think is, well, frankly, remarkable.
In the past, we've talked about migration policies for climate action before and how they take all sort of sense of self-determination away from Pacific Island communities. Yes. Doesn't that sort of statement make a very clear notion that Australia is like, oh, well, you can just move here if it all goes bad?
Well, Yeah, I mean, Australia has offered to resettle some of the Pacific Islands populations in Australia previously, as long as they assimilated fully into the population, and that was declined because, of course, what that means is the end of the country, and so one of the things that we've got to keep in mind here is how do you sort of deal with a situation where there is a possibility that a country will lose its territorial integrity, but retain its status and retain its language and its culture and its customs. And so that is an incredibly thorny and difficult issue. And it's hugely emotionally charged because, of course, the islands themselves don't want that. They want to be able to stay in their homelands. They don't just want to move to Australia and get fruit-picking jobs if it all goes horribly wrong. So, I think it was an insensitive thing to say. And I don't think it was helpful to the kind of broader conversation about how we support the Pacific through the coming decades.
And just going back to that sort of assimilation, integration sort of policy that Australia has mentioned in the past, I mean, we know even from the New Zealand perspective that that is something that really doesn't work and shouldn't be a priority, I suppose, to just be like, oh, okay, we'll just all integrate and it'll be fine, because it takes self-determination away again. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does. And like I said, I mean, I guess what's really paramount here is to say, well, how do you retain your cultural identity and what are those things consist of, whilst holding on to being able to stay in your home country? And so, we know, and like New Zealand is no paragon of virtue in this regard. We've had some terrible dealings with the Pacific in our history as well. But I think that, where we're at now is we're saying, okay, well, kind of having learned from what we did wrong in the past, how do we how do we support people primarily to stay in their countries? But then, you know, if things kind of do go badly wrong, what do we need to do to be able to support not just individual people or families, but an entire culture?
Now, the Tuvalu Prime Minister, Inele Sopoaga, said he is concerned that New Zealand is thinking the same way as Australia, and if so, the Pacific will have no choice but to buckle under. Is there any chance that New Zealand will go this way, or does New Zealand have any chance of having an effect on Australia and their decision in the matter?
Well, I mean, look, Australia and New Zealand cooperate to an incredibly high degree in the Pacific, particularly when it comes to aid and development. And I think we've broadly got a pretty good track record there, but particularly recently. But, you know, we don't see eye to eye on everything. And I would say that, you know, as we're thinking about how we work with the Pacific Island states, to make sure that they've got the ability to adapt to climate change, bring down our own emissions so that we're not contributing to the problem. You know, we're just going to steer our own course in that regard.
So now I'd like to just quickly move on to the Independent Policy Conduct Authority report that came out last week. Could you explain what this is just briefly and what the Green Party's opinion is on it?
Yeah, so I mean the thing about this was this is an incident that happened 3.5 years ago where the police raided the home of Nikki Hager, a journalist who had written a book on dirty politics, and essentially the Green Party laid a complaint in the name of Matilda Ture, previous co-leader, saying that, you know, we thought that was out of order because he was a journalist, and so what's happened is there was a court case that delayed the IPCA. This is the Independent Police Complaints Authority that delayed their investigation, which is why it's taken 3.5 years to publish the result. But the report's pretty damning, and it did say basically that the police raided his house without proper authority, that they'd not told the kind of whole story to the judge who issued them the warrant, and that they frankly didn't know what they were doing when it came to the protections that journalists have under the law, and so it, you know, it was a pretty grim report in that regard.
Now, this was something that happened 3.5 years ago, but in comparing this finding by the IPCA to the recent police raids of the ABC journalists in Australia, do you think journalists are likely to be subject to more unlawful police raids in New Zealand? And is it likely that New Zealand's going to react to this in any way?
Well, what I hope is that there have been lessons learned from the raid on, well, I guess from the legal fallout of the raid on Nikki Hager's home, and that actually the police now have got better processes and systems in place. They have said that some things have changed as a result of, particularly the court case that occurred afterwards, and they're kind of looking at improvements. But I'm not sure that all of the lessons learned have been. And so, we've been talking to Stuart Nash, who's the police minister, to say, hey, can you please make sure that police do understand fully the extent of their responsibilities when it comes to relations with journalists? Because, frankly, you know, raids on journalists' homes are, in effect, a raid on a democratic institution, and we should be incredibly
cautious. That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.